Final Hour Overdrive continues, brought to you by FanDuel, bringing you everything from the opening line to the final score. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Pierre LeBrun coming up. One team is through to the Cup Final. The Florida Panthers are through. And they go through Boston, Toronto, Carolina to get there. It was not a cheap route.
Yeah.
Like they went through monsters to get there. Monsters. Down 3-1 to Boston. You know, dismantling the Leafs, dismantling Carolina. I don't care how close the games were against Toronto and Carolina. They won them all.
Will they be a favorite no matter what?
I don't think they'll be favored because I assume it'll be Vegas, and I think Vegas is right there with them in terms of how they've gotten past teams. They dismantled Winnipeg in five. They beat Edmonton in six. They might sweep Dallas.
Somebody's got to be a favorite, Hazy. Who's it going to be? Let's say Vegas wins tonight. They'd be favorites?
I think it'll be Vegas slightly. I think it'd be like minus 130, minus 140. It'd be a slight favorite. Slight.
I mean, that was
tough to bet against Florida, though, right now.
I agree. Is there anybody out there that that's bracket has survived? Like, there's some like
no
guaranteed.
Chance.
There's no chance that somebody, let's say it's Vegas, Florida. There's nobody that shows that. I know there's going to be
Colorado, Boston, and the Rangers got punted in the first round. No one had a bracket with that on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Like, I just. Maybe there's a local in Vegas that was like, yeah, I'll choose my team and somebody in Florida. Ah, that Florida team looks pretty good. Take a flyer. Unless you bought 20 brackets, then you could mix it up or whatever.
But even that, the getting the combinations right are so tough. I think it's more likely the opposite, Noodles. Someone in Florida says, I'll take my Panthers, and then who was first in the West? I'll take the first-place team in the West.
Yeah,
like Vegas,
fair.
Vegas is here on merit, right?
Yeah, they
had a great regular season. Florida made the playoffs by a point, and it's more of a miracle run in Florida because of the nature of the regular season, right?
Right.
And the goaltending, flip-flopping, although the same thing applies in Vegas. They've had different goalies play as well. But Vegas was the top seed in the West. So from that standpoint, I guess it's somewhat predictable. And that's what's coming, like the number one seed versus the eighth seed. That's what likely is going to be a Cup Final. And that is something that's going to come out of this. And it's understandable. As you know, in hockey, you punch a ticket and anything can happen. Probably more so than any other sport. I think baseball's got that feel a little bit, right? If you're healthy, you get some pitching at the right time, everything can work out for you. Basketball, that's not the way it works. You know, like it might this year with Miami through. They had to play their way in, but Denver was the top seed in the West. You know, Boston the top in the East, if Boston can survive. But, you know, football generally, you get that first week by those top seed teams. They generally earn in a more advantageous position. The NHL, with a hard salary cap, a lot of parity, a lot of teams.
Yeah.
That's probably the messaging, right? Like, just do what you can to get in, and then it's on the players to take it from there. Right?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what management's thinking, ownership's thinking. Get in. See what happens.
There's a lot of pressure. You're right. Like, think about it. Last year, the Boston Bruins lost in the first round, and they fired their coach. Like, that's what it was. Now, they lost again in the first round this year at one of the biggest shocking upsets. I don't know if there's going to be huge fallout, but I was surprised that they fired Cassidy last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they have a standard. They have an expectation. But you heard Brady Tkachuk in the 4 o'clock hour saying, "We just want to get there." It shows that once you get there, anything can happen. You got to stay healthy. You have to get good luck. You got to get the right calls. You got to get a lot of things have to fall into place for you to make a march. You know?
Yeah, like you got to have talent. You got to have a goaltender.
Yeah, obviously. That's
Bobrovsky's been phenomenal. Like he's so good. And Tkachuk's up for the MVP. He's up for the heart. This isn't some random guy that you haven't heard of before that's on a miracle run. The guy was literally one of the three best players in the league this year. So he's doing what you would expect in a way, you know, what you know he was capable of doing. Maybe you didn't envision three-game winners over a four-game sweep and, you know, two OT winners and a winner with 4 seconds to go. But he's one of the best players in the league. So, and that's what you need. You know, and Jack Eichel's doing that on the other side in Vegas. He's one of the best players in the league. He has been for a while, and he's playing like it. Here's Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. Copycat league, Pierre. What do you think the other GMs in the league are going to take from this Florida run and maybe try to apply to their own team moving forward?
Oh, boy. First of all, I got to get the tragically hip out of my mind. I was just going on a hip, 10 songs in a row in the car here. I'm in the parking lot. One of my daughters on the ice, and I just put the hip on.
Right.
When I get in a hip mode, man, I just get all... I want to be at the lake, and I just, oh, man, I'm so fired up right now.
Yep, it's hypnotic. It's hypnotic.
Yeah, yeah. I think we got to be careful to label Florida, the number 8 seeds, and there's no question they got in by a hair. We all know the story, Pittsburgh helping them in the final week, losing at home to Chicago, but... It's also a team that won the President's Trophy the year before, and I remember thinking during the year when the Panthers were struggling and I was doing other hits and people were asking about them, you know, I never thought they were as good as the first team in the league last year. They had a lot of shootout wins and overtime wins, and it kind of masked, you know, it kind of inflated their point total last year. But at the same time, I never thought they were the team that was struggling this year. Somewhere in the middle of first in the league and a number 8 seed lied, I thought, a decent team when they were healthy and everything was going. Add to that the fact, and I've talked to Paul Maurice about this during the playoff run, the metamorphosis of this team, which was a real struggle. He had to convince a bunch of players early on this year to completely change their ways. And, you know, Sasha Barkov, the captain, was telling me a couple of weeks ago while they were playing the Leafs, he said, you know, we went from an offense-only team to a team that plays a style that has more repeatable success. I mean, that's what the captain of the team said. And it was not easy. Like, there were guys that struggled to get on board here with what Paul Maurice was selling in the first couple months, and it didn't look good. But needless to say, they got it together just in time.
How do the people that are, you know, you talk about being a copycat league, Pierre, and people stop me and they say, I want a guy like Sam Bennett over a guy like William Nylander, but how do you kind of find a balance with that? Because if you have a bunch of Sam Bennetts that score 17 to 22 goals, maybe you struggle to get into the playoffs.
Right.
So how do you look at players and personnel and say, that's nice, but you got to have a mix of it?
Oh, dog, that is a great question. I just like to point that out. I think I've mentioned this before, but one of my favorite quotes ever was from Brian McClellan a year after the Capitals won the Cup, you know, and they finally got, they unburdened themselves by finally breaking through, right, and so on and so on. And one of the things he said to me once was, one of the things that he realized after winning the Cup is that you need to try and juggle your roster so that you have a team for the regular season, which is not nothing, by the way. It's hard to make the playoffs, and it's important to have success in the regular season.
Yeah.
But you also need a team for the playoffs. And there are certain players that are for the playoffs in your roster, and there are certain players that are for the regular season on your roster, and some overlap. And that always stuck with me, because I know exactly what he's saying. And by the way, I think we know who his playoff guys are.
Let me interrupt you for a second. How many years in a row do you need to see players not play well in the playoffs to deem them playoff players or not playoff players?
Right, right. Well, I was going to answer your original question by saying I'd like to have Sam Bennett and William Nylander on the Leafs.
You know what? Both of them on the same line would be a great line.
Yeah, I mean, Nylander played his guts out, I thought. It's just that he's so inconsistent. And he's like, but when he's going, like, especially on elimination night, I thought he was Toronto's best player. But yes, you need some Sam Bennett. You need the guy that the other fan base hates. The reason they hate him. I mean, there's a level of greasiness to all four teams that reached the conference finals. You can point out the guys. I mean, one is suspended right now for Dallas. I'll just say it. Jamie Benn's one of my favorite players in the league. He made a dumb decision at a terrible time, but I'll have him on my team any day, Jamie Benn. You need those guys, but... You know, the trick for the Leafs here, and whether it's Brad Treliving or someone else that comes in as GM, is to be careful how much you change, because this is a team that gets 100 points a year, and that's not nothing. And I've got to tell you, I've asked this question to a lot of different front office people around the league over the last couple of weeks, just out of curiosity to get their answer. And I've not had a uniform answer when I asked them what they would do if they were running the Leafs. There's a lot of different answers coming in. Hmm. And I think that tells you it's not an easy situation to be in right now in Toronto Maple Leafs.
Tell us some.
Well, for starters, I had this conversation with one executive today, you know, and I think you said this week, O-Dog. I don't know where Brian and Noodles are on this, but the first thing this guy said to me is, you can't go past July 1st with Austin Matthews still being unsigned. The idea that you still have a whole year to figure it out and there's goodwill and, you know, the whole point is to sign him. You don't want to trade him. Of course, that's the whole point is to sign him. But once July 1st comes and goes, if he's not signed, you've lost all your leverage. Now, at the end of the day, signing him is the only option. I haven't heard a single person from another organization when I asked them about the Leafs say, what do you do there? Everyone wants him signed if they're the Leafs. No one said trade Austin Matthews. So, but there's some urgency to it. There, you know, there's 5 weeks to go. The guy that I found a real mixed response on is Mitch Marner. There's no question that every single person I talk to believes he's an almost impossible player to replace, but he's also the guy that nets you the most. And if there's any way to bring back a number one defenseman in a trade for Mitch Marner, that's the trade that you look at. That's what I've heard from some people. But I've also heard people say, don't even go there. Don't even go there. Can't win without Mitch Marner. Again, just to show you that a lot of smart hockey people look at this completely differently right now when it comes to what the Leafs need.
Well, and that is what makes it very complex and very difficult to get a read on is, you know, as they continue to interview prospective GMs, all of them are going to step in with a different viewpoint. And then on top of it, Shanahan's got his viewpoint. And, you know, who knows what he really believes or what he wants to believe and what he's the view he's taking. Is he taking a Stanley Cup or bust view, or is he taking a business blueprint view, right?
Right.
Where he's the president, which means he's beholden to owners, and this is a business. This isn't fun. They're here to make money. Obviously, they'd make the most money if they won a cup, right? If you win a Stanley Cup, they'd make a fortune, an absolute fortune. But miss the playoffs, that loses a lot of revenue, right? Like that.
Right.
So it's compelling having those home dates. How many did they have? They had, what, six home playoff games? That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money they just made.
And again, being a good regular season team, I know people scoff because we've all grown up with the Stanley Cup being the only thing that matters to us as fans, as media. But being a team that routinely just is able to drop 100 points in the bank before the puck even drops in October is not nothing.
Right.
Like let's look at the Leafs decades of the last 60 years. This is as good as Leafs team as they've ever had. They've just not been able to translate it. But to your point about business, they're good business for 8 months of the year.
Yeah, they are.
So that is not nothing. But again, you're trying to get greedy and figure out both. And to answer your question, it's not easy. I mean, one thing that I would do if I was Brendan Shanahan, and we know that he met with Brad Treliving this week, is that this could be an educational process for Shanahan. It depending on how many people he meets with or talks to over Zoom, to kind of selfishly get their raw perspective of his team. It may be that some of these guys that he's pretty sure going into it, I don't think that guy's going to be my GM, but I sure respect his opinion. And it might be that Brendan Shanahan gets more out of this process than anyone else, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And you hear about that a lot. Of executives that go through a GM search or a coaching search and then turn the tables around in some of these interviews and say, tell me about my team. What would you do? And I've heard of people that have used that and actually put that into action, even though that person who shared that information doesn't even end up working with them. So this is a fascinating time now for Brendan Shanahan, although it's certainly also full of risk, after firing Kyle Dubas.
Pierre, if the consensus is that Matthews' contract would be after hiring a general manager would be task number one. What is task number two? You know, like it seems like that's a, you know, that's a huge, large looming thing, but there's still work to be done underneath that. So is it kind of tons? Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, so it just, you know, what is, if it's get a GM in place, see where Austin Matthews' camp is, and then the work starts. Like, what, you know, what is there? There's task 2 to 20, really. That there's some work there, is it not?
Yeah, for sure, Noodles. And listen, they got 10 UFAs, but ironing out the Matthews extension has such an impact on what other players you may be able to get or to stick around has a huge influence. Let's not kid ourselves. That's why it's so important. Number two for me would be deciding whether Sheldon Keefe comes back to coach another year or whether you're making a coaching change, because that's another big, that's a big staple in who you are as a team moving forward. And again, you know, a key for the Leafs, once again, this summer we'll be trying to attract some players perhaps to take a bit less to fill out the bottom end of the roster. And part of that is here we are again. We're going to contend. Austin's back. And here's our coach. And it could be Sheldon Keefe, who, by all accounts, you know, players in Toronto enjoy playing for him. Or it could be Coach X. And either way, you got to make that decision really quickly, I think, to fill out where this is headed. And I suspect that's exactly the order it's going to go in. Figure out Matthews and then the coach, or pretty close, one or the other.
Pierre, you talk about, like, taking money and getting guys to come for less. Like, Nylander's another interesting case where he did show some spirit and he showed some fight and he tried, which I guess we're going to reward people for these days. I guess that's what we're going to do. But if he's going to be commanding $10 million himself, that just doesn't work. Like, you just can't pay another guy double digits and expect to have any kind of balance in your roster. It'd be insane. Insane.
Yeah, and the only thing that could benefit the Leafs in all this, with Nylander and Matthews being 1 year away, is that the cap finally jumps in 12 months. So when those extensions actually come into effect, the cap will go up. Although,
Pierre, you know, I don't care unless the cap's going up $60 million, I don't care. Unless it's going up $60 million, I do not care.
I just don't think there's any, like, there's no way he's getting $10 million a year. He scored.
He's a 40 goal scorer,
and Alex DeBrincat scored it twice in a row. He's not a $10 million player. I'm sorry.
Matthew, what do you think he's going to ask for, Jamie?
And Matthew Tkachuk's up for the heart. Matthew Tkachuk got 9.5. And Tkachuk's a better player than Nylander. Sorry. I know that there's some people obviously around here that would be hurt by me saying that. Not a $10 million player.
Of course not. But guess what? Mitch Marner's not a $10.9 million player, but he got it. I mean, that's what's at the center of all this, is they screwed it up so badly 5-6 years ago, so horribly awful the way they handled it all, that they've jammed themselves up. Because you can't look at Tkachuk's contract because it's irrelevant. You know, like, Matthews starts at 11-6 and moves up. Like, he's not going backwards because Tkachuk's got signed for 9-5. Like, that's not going to happen.
And the other tough part is Matthew Tkachuk's contract in South Florida has a different AAV than how he stayed in Calgary and signed long term. You're getting a bit of a Florida benefit there too. I'm just saying. I mean,
sure,
that's the reality. That's the reality for some of the deals that end up getting signed in Tampa, Florida, Dallas, Vegas.
Yeah, the tax situation.
That's just reality.
Yeah. Here's what bothers me about that though, is the players don't have to accept that. They don't want to. Like, that's just conceded. Tkachuk could have said, no, I'll take 11. And Florida would say, fine, 11. Like, if you want me, because Carolina wants me, other teams want me, Calgary wants me, he chose to accept 9.5. And yet up here in Canada, it's like, you can't do that. I mean, how dare you ask the player to be treated the same way he would in a market where there's five people in the room.
And actually, I would say if there's such a thing as a classy way to force a trade, that's what he did last summer, him and his agent Craig Oster, because they could have been really tough on Calgary and said, you know what, we'll just play out the next year and then we're off just like Johnny Gaudreau for nothing. they gave them such a heads up that at least Brad Treliving was able to get Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar for him. But
well, there's an example there, Pierre. Like, they paid Huberdeau more than Tkachuk got.
Right. And again, that's
like, think about that.
But I mean, the market is part of it, is what I'm saying. The market's part of it.
And he had them over the fire.
And keep in mind, Alberta is, it's a tax, it's the same tax situation as Florida. It's 39%. Like, it's different. Right. Like, Alberta tax is way different than Ontario and Quebec tax. Like, it's, you know, that situation is actually advantageous for Huberdeau.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I call that minus 30 in February tax. That's what I call that.
That is fair.
That's fair.
Going back to Nylander, this is why the timing of all these things kind of stinks for Toronto, is that I agree. Like, first of all, the same applies to Auston Matthews, even though you have no choice but to sign him, because you're no longer a contender if Auston Matthews doesn't sign. But, and I think, Brian, you said this week, and I wholeheartedly agree. I understand that everyone agrees they have to sign Auston Matthews. I understand that everyone has loved everything he's done as a Leaf, because they should. He's arguably the greatest player ever in franchise history already. But it would be nice if the number came in. Listen, he's going to get paid huge, but there's still a difference at the end of the day between a million or two a year.
Yes.
As far as filling out the rest of the roster. And that part of the negotiation will speak volumes too, I think. So, I don't think they get off the hook from that either. But again, then it travels down to Nylander, to O'Dog's point. I wouldn't pay him $10 million either, even I'm sure his side could argue that the number is justified based on other contracts signed around the league. But again, it's filling out the rest of the roster. Really good player. When he's on, he's electrifying. But I think you got to make that fit. And the reality is, he's has an agent who's been very good at these negotiations, Lewis Gross. We saw last time, but he has other clients that, you know, there could be some hardball. And here's the thing. If it goes sideways, your leverage in terms of trading him is not that great, because he's got a year left on his deal. And as another guy from another team said to me today, here we go again. Now you got to bring in the agent and have the agent part of a trade, because you'd rather trade him as a signed player so you get more in return.
Right.
Pierre, but that's a complicated process.
Yeah,
it is. And I've never heard that from anybody. And not everyone has to come out with the Nate MacKinnon comment saying, I'll take that just to be a contender. But there hasn't even been anything mentioned in the same family of language, if you know what
right.
I'm talking about.
Yeah, none of the players. None of them.
Well,
MacKinnon signed after he'd won a cup.
Yeah.
And not to, twist the knife, but the loss, the separation with Kyle Dubas is not nothing when it comes to this thing. I mean, again, you could argue that Kyle Dubas, with less experience, didn't negotiate, the best possible deals for those guys a few years ago, but now you wonder how it would have worked out. My point is, he had pretty close relationship with some of these players. The players, you could tell on exit day, the comments they made about him, have a relationship with him, trust him. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't trust a new guy either, so I don't want to oversell it.
I was just going to say, Pierre, this isn't kindergarten. Yeah. Sometimes you got to go to senior kindergarten. Like, give me a break.
Well, I just mean in terms of the trust in that kind of negotiation in real time is all. I think that,
Matthew's agent just walks down the hall and it's all good.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, I was wondering.
Both got the same agent.
What a jerk thing to say.
It was on a platter for me.
Ask me the question. Let's
What's up with this Dubas story? Kyle's got an agent that's, is in the Wasserman Group, which happens to be the Matthews agency, among other players,
right.
And the PA and some other agents around the league, it sounds, aren't so keen about that. Or what's up with this story?
Well, that's exactly it. Is the original griping definitely comes from rival agents who rightfully point out that the rules are pretty strict about not having anyone in your agency represent anyone on the front office or coaching side. It's actually why, NHL coaches whose salaries have really risen in the last 10 years, as you guys know, there's only four or five coaches agents in the world. It's a very niche sort of, you know, it's Gil Scott, Neil Glassberg, Francois Giguère, Steve Mountain. That's about it, because they can't represent players. They can only represent coaches. And they can represent front office. So there's a church and state divide between the people that can negotiate for players and between the people that can negotiate for coaches and front office. Now, and a lot of this is a bit inside baseball, I think, for a lot of fans, but the person that was negotiating with Shanahan on behalf of Dubas, a guy named Chris Armstrong, is a golf agent for Wasserman. He also, my understanding is, went to school with, and he's been a family friend of the Dubas family for 15-plus years. Like, they've been buddies. And my sense of it is he's not actually Kyle Dubas' agent, but kind of stepped in and said, let me help you out. Having said that, it caught the attention of a lot of rival agents because, of course, he's a golf agent at Wasserman, which also has certified hockey agents. So the NHLPA is looking into the matter, which doesn't mean anything to Kyle Dubas, of course, but what it might mean is, I don't know what it means to, you know, to the people at Wasserman, I guess.
All right. Well, and for the Leafs, it's not their issue anymore, right?
Right.
It has nothing to do with what's going on with them,
right,
and where it's going to go. So we'll see, Pierre. It's going to be an active month and a half, buddy, and we'll let you get back to the hip.
I'm going to go back to the hip. I might stay with the rest of Overdrive, though.
Okay. So
kings and pretty things.
There you go, Pierre.
I'm not staying with Overdrive.
Yeah, that's basically Gord Downie where you just heard that. Thank you, Pierre.
Thank you,
Pierre LeBrunner, TSN Hockey Insider. Yeah, the Hip do have that vibe. They are a summer band. They're a great band at any point, any point. But they kind of synonymous with lakes and cottages being up
north.
Dude,
as soon as I get off the 400 and I'm on the country roads on the way to Collingwood, it's Hip, it's loud, and it's gorgeous.
Yep, it's outstanding. Outstanding. All right, there you go. We got to play some Hip now coming into Richard Griffin. Yeah. Griff is coming up. Right? Longtime writer with the Star. He was working with the Jays for years. Good buddy of ours. Friend of the show.
We
haven't had him on in a long time.
Love one of our buddies.
Yeah. Love Griff. What's up with Manoah? What's up with the Jays? You know, now there's some disputing about the players-only meeting. It sounds like Chapman's not happy that people know that it happened.
Okay, the
that
door
matters.
Was locked.
No, imagine that being a priority. Like,
yeah.
You lose all these games. The door's locked. People can't get in. How did you know about that?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. We tried to open the door, and it didn't open.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's got to be priority number one, making sure that that kind of information doesn't get out. So Griff's coming up on that. Best Bets brought to you by FanDuel later in the hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. There's a Hip for you. Hey, listen, we're going into I guess we're coming out of the long weekend. We didn't talk about May 2-4 at all. You know, and I notice that as you get older and if you got kids that are in school, like May 2-4 used to be the biggest weekend of the year. You're in high school, university.
Dude, it was cottage and 100 million beers.
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
That. The Hip, a cottage, and so many beers. And now, you know, you got kids in school, you got different things going on. It just kind of came and went.
Yeah.
But
Take the day off. That's what you do. You take the day off.
Take the day off.
You enjoy that extra,
enjoy that Monday off.
Exactly.
Best brought to you by FanDuel again later in the hour. The Jays losing again today. And, man, did they struggle in this stretch against the big boys in the AL East. They dropped 3 or 4 against the Yankees. They got swept against the Orioles. And they just dropped 3 or 4 down at the Trop. You know, 2-9 against the Yankees, Orioles, and Rays. They've lost 13 of the last 15 against the American League East. And to chat about it, we're joined by a guy who's been covering this team for a long time, was working with this team for a long time.
Yeah.
One of our favorites. Used to be a regular on the show. Maybe he's back in the rotation. I don't know. GriffsThePitch.com. I love that handle, too. Here's our main man, Richard Griffin. Griff, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, guys. There's three things when I worked for the Jays for 4 years. There's three things that I really, really missed. Was playing golf, coaching baseball, and being on Overdrive. And now this completes my hat trick right there.
Awesome. Great having you on. We love having you back.
So, Griff, would Griff the PR guy be mad at Griff the media mogul and having to talk about this team right now?
Well, I always thought that as a PR guy, I was a better PR guy with 95 losses than with 95 wins. So I'm heading in that direction. I might still be there by the season.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's a difficult situation, and Manoah's at the center of it. Vlad is sort of there. And to me, that was two of the main reasons why they had a team meeting, a secret team meeting, where they wouldn't let the media in the clubhouse.
Yeah, and that's apparently a point of concern for Matt Chapman. He doesn't understand why that got leaked. Like, Schneider was speaking openly about it. And obviously, you know the way this works. The media tries to get in. They can't. They go to the manager. They say, hey, the doors are closed. Obviously, the players are speaking. Like, if you put yourself back in the shoes of trying to operate the public relations, how is that not going to get out? Like, obviously, the media knows that they're having a closed-door meeting.
Yeah, it's not that big an issue for the media because it's a day game. I know they probably got flights to catch, probably from Orlando. But, you know, as a PR person, you're out there. Media's waiting. There's a routine that they go through, like, as soon as John Schneider's ready with his answers and prepped on what questions will probably be asked, he comes out to the screen. And when that doesn't happen, the media wants to know why it didn't happen. So for Chapman coming from Oakland, I don't think they had any media covering after game. So it was cool.
Right.
Griff, you mentioned Manoah and Schneider. They always say the players kind of know. How do you think Schneider going out to the mound and butchering the rule and then Manoah having to come out, how do you think that resonated with the players? Do you think they were like, man, this is amateur hour. How could you screw something like that up? Because the big thing was details, and you got to be on top of stuff, and it's got to be more of a, you know, driven team, a veteran team, and you got to be hard-nosed and all this stuff. Like, how would that have went over with the players?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, here was Manoah with his best start since Yankee Stadium in mid-April. And his manager comes out and asks him if he wants to stay, and he has to take him out. I mean, that is going to be a moment that stands in John Schneider's history until he wins something, wins a World Series, wins an American League pennant. I mean, for John Gibbons, it was fighting Ted Lilly in the hallway. For Charlie Montoyo, it might have been when he overruled Vlad, waving him off for the review, for the replay, and did it anyway. And Vlad was right. They didn't win the replay, and it was a key moment. You know, every manager, until they win, has stuff like that going on. But to explain what happened with Schneider, the second baseman, Adam Frazier, argued a check swing, and that started a confrontation, a verbal confrontation with Manoah. And when Manoah gets in verbal confrontations, that means he's pitching well, because otherwise he's just moping around the mound and looking at the grass. But in this situation, Schneider decided that he had to go out and talk to him, because that's how you deal with a young kid who's emotional all the time. And since they had Mazur warming up for the whole inning, I think that Pete Walker and Don Mattingly said, well, I guess he's going out to take him out. And, you know, they didn't tackle him, which if nobody had been warming up, they definitely would have. I think they thought he had made up his mind to take him out. And when that happened, I'm surprised that none of the players had said, hey, Snags, you know, this is your second trip to the mound, so you've got to take him out. I'm surprised right. That didn't happen. But it's a young manager and, you know, relatively speaking, 43 years old. And, I mean, I remember when he went on your show for the first time, you guys at the end of it, after you let him off, said, oh, yeah, I think I remember seeing him standing next to Charlie Montoyo in the dugout. Now, less than a year later, he's on the firing line.
Right.
Yeah.
It's quick. It turns quickly, yeah, man. Quick. That's the nature of the beast.
The game moves quickly, too.
Sure does.
Griff, that was one kind of butchering from Schneider, but a lot of it's been on Manoah. Like, what do you think's up with him?
Well, I think that, like, for instance, today, he had a private screening of the perfect storm going on in his head. You know, it's like he thinks somebody comes out of it all right. He's not sure what the damage to the boat will be, and he knows you're going to lose some of the crew. But this has been going on with him all season. I think it built up from the off season when he finished third in Cy Young voting. You know that five of the top eight salaries on the Blue Jays are starting pitchers, and his is the sixth because we're counting Hyunjin Ryu, and his is barely above minimum, and he was renewed. And if he gets sent to the minor league, his salary gets cut in half because he's on a split contract. So I think a lot of that plays in his head. Like, he had a winter where he was in the spotlight. MLB Network was all over him, endorsements. And then he comes to spring training, and they renew him in early March with a split contract. And he struggles with the pitch clock. He struggles with all those rules because he's a guy who goes on adrenaline. He steps off the mound in the best of times before the pitch clock, and he stares in at the hitter, tries to intimidate him, rubs the ball up, gets back on the mound. That's all more than 15 seconds. And now he listens to Chris Bassitt and guys like that saying how they're going to work the pitch clock to their advantage. So you see it today. He's running the pitch clock down to 3-2-1, and the runners are taken off. They're stealing seven bases against the Jays today. And
seven,
a lot of those
seven.
Were of his predictability and his struggles with the pitch clock.
Yeah, that seems like something that should be very evident here, right, Griff? Like, there has been a tangible change to where the game is played. And right? Like, it's not that he's not pitching well, clearly. Like, he's having a difficult time getting out of jams. He's getting hit. His numbers are so bloated. Like, it's so extreme in terms of how poorly he's performing. But that is the one thing. Like, it's a smoking gun. There's a pitch clock now. And there wasn't his first 2 years. And he's clearly really struggling with that. But it's not going to change.
He went to the Cape Cod League as a sophomore at West Virginia. And he found himself. He found who he was and how he could be successful. Went back to West Virginia, had a great junior year, was drafted in the first round, had big family, a close family situation, and went to the minor leagues and just was on a heater for 2 years in the minor league, and then came to the major leagues, and it continues. So this is really the first adversity, and it relates to the pitch clock. It relates to him being 24 years old. It relates to him being immature. It relates to him not getting the contract. And I've seen this so often over my 51 years in the game. you don't get your contract. Like, I remember the first time I saw it, a guy was holding out for $25,000 and they wouldn't give it to him. No, I'm kidding. But I'm not kidding about the history of contract issues. And, you know, it's early in the season, 50 games into the season, and so far the only winners are the guys who had the 50-50 in April.
Yeah.
Griff, in hockey, I played with some tone setters, whether it be a Kevin Dineen, Gary Roberts, Brendan Shanahan, and they would take it upon themselves to lead the charge and go out there and let everyone know that they meant business and that you had to follow along. Would you agree with Steve Phillips, who we had on earlier, who said George Springer kind of has to be that guy where he's the veteran guy, he's the leadoff guy, and he could be a tone setter? Is he the one that's got to kind of lead the charge here?
I do agree, O, and I believe that he's the guy who called the meeting today. I'm not sure of that, but just from some of the TV shots in the dugout, in the eighth inning, it looked like Vlad had lost his dog. He was sitting there just staring off, not even thinking about the game that was at hand, but all of a sudden in the ninth inning, he comes up as the tying run in a 6-3 game with a chance with a swing of even a ball up the alley to make it a one-run game and be in scoring position himself. And he wasn't ready. First pitch, he grounds out to end the game. And I'm sure that's the sort of thing that Springer saw. Springer would have seen Manoah's bitching with Pete Walker after he got taken out. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't deserve to stay in longer than three innings. He had already thrown close to 90 pitches. So I do think that Springer is the catalyst behind this, and Chapman is just along for the ride.
With Richard Griffin. But what's interesting about Springer, he was DHing last night, and today it's a scheduled day off. And, like, not even a pinch hit situation. Like, what's up with that?
Yeah, I think he did grab a bat. I think he drew a walk in that game, but in the ninth he drew a walk. But whenever that happens with Springer, that means he's hurting more than he's let. He doesn't talk about his injuries. I mean, I remember the first year that he was with the Jays, and we were down in Texas and trying to get him to make an appearance in front of the media and talk about his injury, and he didn't want to do it because it was worse than the club was letting on. So I think it's a situation like, you know, it's not load management as much as it is looking ahead to the next 30, 40 games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and listen, he's not a young guy, and he's been struggling. You know, it's weird. Like, you look at when they have everyone cooking here, Griff, they still have the makings of an offensive team that should be elite, right? Like, should be an upper echelon team. And they had a strong April. You know, Chapman swung the other way. Kirk has not got off the mat. Springer's not gotten off the mat. You know, Varsho hasn't found a role. He got pinched hit. It was a pinch hit for, you know, in the ninth inning today. But, like, do you believe that once everyone's cooking, Bichette's been great all year, Vladdy's still been good, I think there's another level for him, like, that there is belief here that if they get cooking offensively and everyone's kind of hitting the way that they're capable of hitting, that they can still be somewhat of an offensive juggernaut once it gets rolling in the right direction?
Well, I would say that we talked earlier about the contracts, the biggest contracts being the starting pitchers. You know, Manoah's the biggest letdown in that group. And I think Barrios is, my point is that the starting pitching gives you a chance to be in every game for five or six innings. And that's where you need the auxiliary offensive guys you talk about. I mean, there's no doubt that Bo and Vlad back-to-back are among the top five back-to-back hitters. You put Trout and Ohtani. You put the guys in St. Louis in there. And you look at the Major League OPS totals, and Chapman, Bo, and Vlad are in the top 25 in Major League Baseball. Then you got to drop down into the hundreds for the next guy. Mm-hmm. So they need the support around them. You can't just have those three guys, and once you get through the bottom, through the top of the order in the seventh, you go, uh-oh, we're done, because, you know, the next six guys are coming up to end the game in the last two innings. You can't do that. You need support. But I think the starting pitching is the key in terms of being able to keep them in games for five or six innings, and then the bullpen and the rest of the offense has to step up.
Well, Griff, you're a legend. We love having you back on.
Yep.
We've missed you for years. Obviously, you were a busy man, but and you're still busy. You're still doing a lot. Again, the website, griffsthepitch.com, and we love having you back in the swing of things here, Griff, and hopefully we get a chance to do it again soon.
I personally would like to say thank you, Griff, and I really enjoyed that conversation.
There
Let's do it again
yes.
soon.
Yeah, me and baseball are like those two cowboys on Brokeback Mountain. I wish I knew how to quit.
Well, there you go. You're still rolling. You're still doing it, man, and the games
right,
continue. Thank you, Griff.
Anytime.
There he is, Richard Griffin. And, yeah, he's been covering this game. He's been in the game for 50 years.
Wow.
Griff. Yeah, working with the Expos, writing for the Star forever, the Jays. You know, that's
beauty.
That's him, you know. And, yeah, so there you go. The Jays, you know, they lose again today, and they're still above 500. They're still over 100 games. Like, it's a long season. Things are not going their way right now. He makes a good point, the rotation. You know, these guys are paid to perform. The one guy who's not getting paid is Manoah. But,
yeah.
Like, Barrios getting paid, Kikuchi's getting paid. Gausman, Bassett, that's where they've invested their money, is these five guys who are all healthy.
Right.
Go out there and give them starts, give the offense a chance, you know, to you don't have to put up monster numbers every single night. It shouldn't be the case, but that has been the case for the most part recently. And again, they dropped three or four in Tampa. Not good.
They got to get going. They got to get cooking.
Got to get going. Yep,
yeah.
Got to get going. Best Bets brought to you by FanDuel coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Today's Best Bets powered by FanDuel. Make your picks and assemble a same-game parlay in seconds on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I have an SGP for the ball game tonight. Not touching the total. Kind of feel like Boston's going to win. And if they win, they might win big. It's a big number, though. You got to lay eight. So I'm going to avoid that. But I think Tatum shows up. And I think Butler shows up, even if they lose. Butler's just a big game player. He's going to show up. Tatum over 31.5 points tonight. Butler over 28.5. You parlay those, you get plus 243. I like those odds. I think both guys show up tonight. So there you have it. Today's best bets powered by FanDuel. Bet your favorite NBA superstars from first basket score to top point score on FanDuel this postseason. Please play responsibly. Must be 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. So there you have it. Jays are back in action in Minnesota tomorrow. You got a hockey game tonight. Dallas looking to survive.
Does your Stars do it?
I don't know, man. Like, I'm not going to say anything because I don't need to hear from Pete DeBoer and Steve Spott. Like, I'll recuse myself from that. But
I think they win.
You think Dallas wins tonight?
Yeah, I do. I think they win tonight. I'd like to see.
Maybe not spot them three at the 17-minute mark of the first period.
Ideally, don't do that. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Our boy Michael Block, the Block Party.
Yeah.
Last place. And by a significant margin. He's 9 over on the 18th tee. And it's a mess. Like, he's a mess. He just doubled 15, doubled 16. This guy's going to shoot like a 45 on the back.
Dude, that's why there's some guy out there that's a dialed-in touring pro that's like, you got to give him a sponsor's exemption. I know he's popular and stuff, but my game's ready for that tour, and guy's 10 over
par. No dice.
Yeah.
Going low tomorrow, though. I believe in him. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
4 p.m. We'll chat then.
Introducing TSM Plus.
What a game changer.
Canada's new home for PGA Tour Live.
Are you kidding me?
Exclusive data-enhanced feeds, plus more goals, dunks, aces, and speed. Visit tsn.ca/TSN Plus to learn more.